Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I am Tim. Welcome to the podcast where we take a lighthearted look at the dark side of history. The title of our podcast today is Comrades, the story of Jumpin' Joe and Alexandria. It's a World War II theme topic today. So it's an interesting story. We're going to jump into it. But before we do, let me remind you that we are a true crime comedy podcast and we use adult language. So if adult language offends you, then...
then go watch Barney the Purple Dinosaur. We don't want your ass around here anyway.
Check out one of the other fine podcasts out there, like our friends with They Walk Among Us, our friends at Haunted Visions, our friends at Rants and Reasons, right?
Rants and Reason podcast, yes. Timmy.
It's a very good one. And our friends at Deadball, which is us, basically. Mm-hmm. I would like to introduce... a lady who really needs no introduction, a lady who has been called Brandy the Benevolent, Her Majesty Queen Brandy the First. How are you today, Brandy?
I'm doing good, Timmy.
You really don't sound like Brandy at all.
I got a little bit of a cold here, Tim.
If you haven't guessed yet.
I got to go. I can't really stay for this episode. But I really want to appreciate you and the Colonel carrying the weight here.
I know Brandy, we've often wondered what you think of our physical appearance, the Colonel and I.
Oh, you're quite impressive specimens, Timmy.
Yeah, and you find us attractive, do you?
It's hard for me to keep my hands off of you.
And what do you think of our intelligence, Brandy?
I think you're down in your office is splitting an atom every day.
We really haven't lost a lot with Stephen Hawking, have we? So Brandy, you sound like you have a bad cold.
I got a low bronchitis, Timmy. I need to cut back to maybe 3 packs of cigarettes a day.
Are you still drinking pretty heavily, Brandy?
Yeah, but I cut down. I'm just drinking.
Only to excess?
I'm not drinking the moonshine anymore. I'm just brown liquor,
okay.
Whiskey.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're taking care of your health, Brandy.
Yeah. The other way, and I'm doing good. I got a... I can't name because I got to do not disclose, but there's an economics teacher that has paid me.
Oh, I see.
Money and, not and to disclose our affair.
Now, there is, you know, there have been rumors that you've had this relationship with this economics professor, but you're saying that you cannot disclose that now.
That's right. He gave me $13 not to talk about it.
I see. Well, Brandy, we're sorry you can't stay because we would love to have you for this whole episode.
Well, I would love to be around you two handsome creatures for a whole hour, but I got drinking and whoring to do, Timmy.
You got to plug into your iron lung.
Yeah.
Okay, so Brandy is going to have, unfortunately, she has to leave, but thank you for stopping in, Brandy, at least to say hi. It shows us how much you care about your audience.
Yeah, well, fuck them. I got drinking to do, goddammit.
Okay, so Brandy's not here, obviously, today. But she'll be with us next time. But we do...
she'll be here.
Maybe we'll just
maybe
do this
we'll
again.
Maybe we'll just replace her ass.
This is kind of fun, actually.
Yeah,
let me introduce the a man who is known as the moral compass of our podcast.
Nope.
A man who... has been described as an oasis in the desert of despair. A man who he's just well-loved. The very honorable, the Reverend Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters, the third, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
Well, not good, Timmy.
What's wrong now? You can talk now because Brandy's not. She always interrupts you when you share.
She never lets me get my not good stuff.
When you
out.
Share your struggles, but I'm going to let you elaborate. So, what's wrong, Colonel? What's wrong today?
First of all, Timmy, I cracked my front tooth.
I saw that. It's much worse than I told you, by the way. But no, I'm just kidding. How did you crack your front tooth?
Well, I was just taking a vitamin. And mm-hmm. I popped it down, and if my wife would have got me the gummy vitamins that I wanted, this would have never been a problem.
So this is basically Renee's fault.
Yeah, it is. And then I went, instead of getting a glass of water, mm-hmm. I turned on the faucet, and, you know, my depth perception.
You drank directly from the faucet.
I did, Timmy.
Has Renee ever told you not to do that?
She has repeatedly told me not to do that, Timmy.
Do you drink milk from the bottle?
Well, Renee doesn't. Yeah, goddamn right I do. I buy the damn milk. I drink it any way I want.
Renee's not listening. You can say whatever you
yeah,
want.
Yeah, that's right.
So you chipped your tooth, or we don't know.
Well,
yet.
I cracked it.
You cracked your tooth. So you have to go to the dentist directly after this.
Yes.
For emergency dental repair.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're sorry to hear that, Colonel. I know that you take your appearance. You know, you kind of look like Bobby Hall right now. Like you're in Slapshot or something.
And I'm, you know, Timmy, I'm a little disturbed because more and more, I mentioned this the last time, but more and more, they're not honoring these do not disclose forms.
Yeah, I know. Are you worried about Stormy Daniels coming back to haunt you?
It's not Stormy I'm worried so much about, but I got a lot of people. I said, you know, if I give you $20, could we just let this go?
Yeah.
Yeah. You ever think about this, Timmy? Now, Stormy Daniels is an attractive woman, right?
Yeah.
But, and men, if you're listening, y'all don't judge me because y'all know it's true. Every one of us has been with somebody that if it came out, you'd be like, yeah, I will give you $1,000 to just never say we were ever together.
Those are one-timers. They call those one-timers. Yeah, that's someone I banged once.
You had a little bit too much
you
to
don't,
drink.
Not twice.
Not I twice. Mean, that's right.
Twice is a high bar for me. But once, yeah, almost anyone will fit in that category. But
yeah, but there ain't people
you don't want to brag about it.
You don't brag about it, and you don't want them talking about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah. I understand, Colonel. I'm with you.
And now they're not respecting those things, and I just want them.
I remember when, Clinton was president, and they went out and they dug up all that on him, and it was like a $60 million investigation. I'm telling you, it would not take $60 million to investigate me.
It'd take about $1.37
and a couple phone calls
down to my office to have me, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, Colonel. Well, I hope your tooth is. I hope they're able to repair it, so you don't have to.
I'm just going to stick a chiclet on the. Well, I'm
no one would. Ever, no one would.
No
know.
One notice.
All right. So I know it's the people on our Facebook page. We want to encourage people to join our Facebook page if you haven't. It's History Dweebs the podcast, and also leave us some reviews on iTunes. That's the only way people find our podcast. So if you could take a minute and leave us a review, we would appreciate it. We're going to talk about this story. You know, I know, Colonel, you were in the... Now, when we first started this podcast in 2015, can you believe it's been 3 years?
No, I cannot, Timmy.
It's I think that's right, right?
Quite, yeah, 3 years now.
3 years. And when we started this, you were running for high office. You was running for president, if I remember right.
I was, Timmy, but then I dropped out because
did you
I
notice
thought
any
it was
Russians,
going to go a different way.
Did you notice any Russians in the...
all
around.
The people around me was Russian.
Really?
He was drinking vodka, eating.
So they were trying to influence, they were trying to, you know, make you an asset during the election?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got tons of money from the Russians. That's why I dropped out.
You got all the money you needed?
I got all the money I needed.
The rubles.
Yeah.
So are you considering running again in 2020?
It depends on what Vladimir asked me to do.
Oh, I see. I see.
How much money he's willing to give me, Timmy.
Do you think you could win? I mean, it was kind of a ridiculous thought when you ran the first time, but
And then it built momentum, and all of a sudden I had like three people that were going to vote for me.
I think you would have been a good alternative, actually.
Actually, you know,
you've been
you
a
people,
rational alternative.
You people laughed at me, and now you're thinking,
It doesn't look so bad.
It doesn't look so bad.
But are you consider running in 2020?
Yeah, and I'm just going
to... If the people on our Facebook page... encourage you to.
If they encourage me to, I will, and I'm going to run on one thing to me.
Okay.
I don't have a Twitter account. Okay. Well, I do have a Twitter, but I don't know how to use it.
Oh, that's going to be your platform?
No Twitter.
No Twitter, actually.
No okay. Twitter, none at a time.
Okay. All right. So, well, speaking of Russians, this story involves a Russian. This is a story about an American soldier named Jumping Joe Byrol and a Soviet, there was Soviet Union in back in the Second World War, a Soviet Union tank commander by the name of Alexandria. And they became buddies in the war. They kind of had a little fling, I think. And this is their story. So although the United States and the Soviet Union are adversaries now, Colonel, and during the Cold War, they were one time, the two superpowers were once close allies, as you know, during the Second World War. They worked together to defeat Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany. A young man from Michigan named Joseph Byrol became the only American to fight both in the Soviet, U.S. Army and the Soviet Army during World War II. So he got paid twice. He should at least get to eat twice.
I wonder if the Russians paid him, Timmy.
I
bet they didn't pay him what they paid me.
Probably not. He would fight alongside of a Russian or a Soviet tank commander by the name of Alexandria Samsusko. Samsusko. I'm probably fucking that up, but, you know, we'll call her Alexandria.
Just Russian. Alex.
Alexandra. And she was the only female Russian tank commander in World War II. This is a story of friendship, endurance, and sacrifice. It's kind of a remarkable story, actually.
It's like The Notebook, only they kill people.
Yeah, kind of, just like that.
Yeah.
You know, Amber Krupp would like this story, I think.
it's got romance.
Romance, murder.
Some dirty, muddy sex. And killing. Love and killing people.
Yeah.
Blowing people up with tanks.
Yeah. Amber what could be more romantic than that?
Only if they ban that at people.
Joseph R. Byrol was born on August 25th, 1923, in Muskegon, Michigan. You ever been to Muskegon, Colonel?
I've been to Muskegon, Timmy.
Yeah, you vacation up there. Are you vacationing to Michigan again this year?
I am. We're going to, I forget the name of the place we're going to.
But it's in Michigan.
It's in Michigan.
You're up there in Clark country.
I think Clark's far up north.
Okay.
We usually go down to the lower bottom of the lake, but we might end up at Clark's house.
Is it where's the bears at? The bear caves? Is that I think I don't know if I can you know how you make Michigan your hand?
Or yeah,
I don't know. It's like in the upper part. Someone will tell us. Someone will know from the page. Clark will probably know. Okay, so anyway, he was born in Muskegon, Michigan, 1923. He graduated high school in 1942. So he graduated a year after Pearl Harbor. So Pearl Harbor occurred, of course, in December of 1941, and then he graduated the following spring. Now, he was quite a baseball player, Joseph was, but he turned down a scholarship at the University of Notre Dame and instead joined the Army to serve in the parachute infantry. He was a skydiver, paratrooper. He trained in Georgia after he graduated high school, and he served in the 506th Parachute Infantry Regiment, 101st Division, also known as Screaming Eagles.
Screaming Eagles,
legendary unit, yes.
I never heard an eagle scream.
Yeah, I've never heard him scream, but I'm sure they do when they get angry, upset.
Yeah.
Joe specialized in radio communications and demolitions. Because of his love for parachuting, Joe was given the name Jumpin' Joe, Colonel.
Jumpin' Joe.
Jumpin' Joe.
Jumpin' Joe Flash. Rolling Stones wrote a song about Jumpin' Joe Flash.
I think that was Jumpin' Jack, but close enough. He got his nickname from his commanding officer, and the name kind of stuck with him. He was stationed in Ramsbury, England. I wonder if Ben and Rosanna knows where that is.
England's only about 50 square miles.
No, sure that's not true. Maybe Leanne knows. She lives in England.
England is not a big place, though, Timmy.
Well, it's not as big as the United States, but it's more than 50 square miles.
It's like Ohio.
It's a little bigger than that, I think. I don't know. We'll have to measure it. Have you measured it?
I have not.
All right.
I'm actually talking out my ass here. I know Australia is bigger.
You see, Trump made up was making up facts when he talked to the
and then just admitted Trudeau. To it.
Yeah, you know, I just made shit up.
Here's the thing: if you're gonna make up facts, and first of all, don't make up facts. Right. You know,
well,
I mean,
we would never do that.
I'm not. As the colonel has a certain code.
I know you do.
And if you're going to make up facts, never if, and that's a hypothetical thing.
Right,
to
right.
Me. If you do, don't just come out and say that. Oh yeah, I just made that shit up. Yeah, you know, unless it's to your kids, then you can tell them anything. No, I just made that shit up.
And then the day before that, of course, he said that professional mountain climbers were coming across the border.
Yeah, I didn't know there was. I guess the Rockies go up through Canada and.
Yeah.
So I guess those goddamn Canadians keep sneaking in here.
Well, they're stealing
our country,
all the jobs.
Stealing our jobs.
All the professional mountain climbing jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, I got bumped out of a spot.
Okay, so Jumpin' Joe went to become a paratrooper. Okay, so he's in England preparing for the D-Day landings in June of 1944. Prior to D-Day, though, he was involved in several missions behind the enemy lines in France. He twice was flown in to German-occupied territory in France and parachuted down with gold for the French resistance. The United States, of course, and Great Britain were supporting the resistance in France, and they had to get the money, so that was his job. That was pretty dangerous. Well, it's dangerous now, but it was really dangerous back in the Second World War. Then came D-Day and Operation Overlord, of course, that occurred in June of 1944. Before more than 5,000 ships landed, the Allied troops on the beaches of Normandy in the morning hours of June 6, 1944, some 1,200 planes flew over the land to drop thousands of paratroopers behind German lines. Of course, they were preparing to help make the way for the D-Day invasion. Joe was a part of that. And it was very dangerous work. The casualty rates were really high, and they flew at night. In the night of June 5th, which was hours before the D-Day invasion, and it was a very dangerous mission. And they had to land behind enemy lines, and then cut bridges or destroy bridges and cut power supplies. Soften up the defenses for the men who were about to land on Utah Beach at dawn. With planes blowing up around him, there's flak, anti-aircraft, all that going on, tracer fire. He parachuted above the Germans who saw him and started firing at him. Unfortunately, he landed, this is something like you would do, Colonel. He landed on a roof of a church. And
hopefully not the steeple.
On the roof of the church, and it just happened to be a Nazi sniper hiding in the steeple. So he did not have good luck. The sniper started shooting at his parachute during its entire descent.
Oh, that's no fun.
Yeah, he was kind of a sitting duck there. I mean, what can you do?
Well, I think I told you the story. This was not on the thing, but my father was a meteorologist, and
right.
And he'd send those weather. Well, I told that story in the last one, but he'd send the weather balloons up.
Yeah, in
and
Korea,
he knew
right.
If the first one went up and got shot down, just to get the hell out of the area.
Well, unfortunately, Joe did not have that option. He survived the drop, though. He survived the jump. He was flying in a Douglas C-7 Skytrain in the night, and the night was lit up by German searchlights and anti-aircraft fire. So, I mean, at times it was just like being in daylight. He jumped an altitude of 120 meters and had a hard landing on the church's roof there in France. He never was able to meet up with the rest of his unit, but managed to by himself to completely sabotage several bridges and power stations. He blew up a power station, but unfortunately for Joe, he crawled through a hedge grove and fell headfirst into a German machine gun nest. So he's having a bad night. Can you imagine all the confusion that would have gone on D-Day? And there had to be a lot of friendly fire. And
oh, yeah.
Some of the tanks sank. Like they came out too soon. Mm-hmm. They was transporting them across the channel.
Right.
And they came out too soon. Some of the guys who jumped out too soon, and their packs
weighed them
took,
down.
Took them right to the bottom. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't have a chance. So, yeah. So I guess in some ways he was fortunate he survived it. But he was captured, and he spent the next 7 months as a German prisoner of war. They marched him, the Germans marched him deeper into France toward a POW holding area when suddenly explosions started ripping out from them everywhere. And he thought it was German artillery or American aircraft. Joe wasn't sure. But both the Germans and American POWs were getting killed in this, because they were under attack. Joe took during this time, Joe took shrapnel in his leg and was blown off his feet into a ditch. But rather than lay there, he used it as an opportunity to escape. He evaded capture for another 12 hours behind enemy lines before they caught him again. I mean, this guy just goes through hell. This time the Germans put him in a truck and drove it toward St. Louis, France, but the truck was strafed with Allied aircraft. I mean, this guy...
He's getting shot by your own
aircraft. Yeah, he can't. So, again, he tried to escape when this happened. He disarmed three guards. He was put in this shelter, like a little workshop area, this shelter. He disarmed three guards in the workshop, knocking two of them unconscious and forcing the other guard's head into a vise.
That's some bitch like Chuck Norris.
He was pretty badass.
They got Joe Pesci over there fighting in World War II.
He was pretty badass. Although he got away for a few hours, he was caught again by patrol. Was taken back to St. Louis, France, and then the Americans bombed St. Louis all night long. And fortunately for Joe, he survived that. He was moved through seven different POW camps and escaped two more times unsuccessfully during this adventure.
This is a slippery little son of a bitch.
Yeah, and eventually you just think they just let him
Fuck
go.
It. Just go, man.
Just go.
We're tired of it. It just takes 20 people to watch your ass. Yeah, can't fight this war.
Just go. On the second attempt of these attempts, Joe and his fellow soldiers boarded a train that they thought was headed to Poland. Of course, Poland being, toward the east, so they thought they could meet up with the Red Army. And that was their plan. Unfortunately, the train was instead headed to Berlin. So, got on the wrong train.
It's the first American in Berlin.
So, they get off the train in Berlin thinking they're in Poland. And
motherfucker, you can't see a sunset? Well, to me, this is a short story. It had made me crazy. My son was in a play. And my mother-in-law calls me. And she's trying to find the school. It's out in Mason that Tanner was in a play in.
Mm-hmm. Just north of Cincinnati.
And I'm like, where are you at? They're in a different car. And she's like, we're at the corner of this and that. And I said, well, okay, when you tell people you're at the corner, there's four goddamn corners, okay?
Right.
So I said, well, which way are you facing? Now, she's got her husband in the car, and she's got her best friend and their husband in the car.
Okay.
And she said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, which way are you facing?
Uh-huh.
Because I'm going to tell them it's right up the road. You either turn left or turn right, but I don't know which way you're facing. And she said, I don't know. And I was like, well, ask Eddie which way you're facing.
Right.
What direction you're facing. Yeah. And he said, I don't know. And I said, okay, fuck it. Ask Paul. Ask Paul what direction you're facing. And he said, he doesn't know. And now, to me, this is like 7:30 on a summer night.
Right,
okay?
right.
I was like, motherfucker, these are two Vietnam veterans. You can't look up in the sky and tell me where that big, shiny motherfucking thing is up there. You can't tell east from west at sunset looking at the goddamn sun. How in the fuck did you survive in the jungle over there? And then they hung up on me and went home.
Well, I can't imagine
come to the play. They didn't even come to the play. They turned around, drove 15 miles and went home. But how in the hell... When people say which direction, when it's the middle of daylight, or when it's sunset, look for the shiny thing in the sky, goddammit.
Yeah, well, apparently they didn't know they were on this train to Berlin. So they get to Berlin, right? They jump off the train thinking they were going to meet up with the Red Army. Instead, they
Nine!
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 They were captured by the Gestapo, and the Gestapo insisted they were American spies because they could never have, that they parachuted in Berlin, that they never could got there by train, and they started beating them. I mean, they started torturing Joe and.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
His companions. But luckily, the German army intervened, and they said that, since they were POWs, they had jurisdiction over Joe and his fellow soldiers. And
an army was pissed by it, didn't they? They wanted his ass back.
So eventually, the Gestapo, really lucky for them, the Gestapo turned him over to the army because the Gestapo, I mean, not that the German army didn't commit a lot of war crimes, but, you know.
The Gestapo just shoot you and
yeah,
be done
they,
with you.
They were more, they were a lot more rough. But anyway, so they placed him in a POW camp, Stalag III, in western Poland. And unfortunately, for Joe, conditions did not really improve. He was interrogated 16 to 20 hours a day by the Germans. He was beaten, starved, and suffered through mock executions. It didn't stop, however. And soon he made his third bid for freedom in January 1945. So this is getting toward the end of the war here. This time he made it. After escaping the camp, he headed east, probably looked at the sun,
finally learned.
In hopes of hooking up with the advancing Soviet army, because he was too far away from the Western Front, right?
Yeah.
He was over in Berlin, or, you know, in Poland. So he's trying to hook up with the Soviet army here. So that's what he does. He ran into a Russian tank battalion in the 1st Guard Tank Army. And, you know, when we talk about World War II, most of the, you know, and we get kind of hung up on World War II and the Western Front, but really the war was fought on the Eastern Front. I think 80% of all casualties occurred on the Eastern Front. So, you know, Russians, Soviet Union lost 20 million men.
Yeah, they lost a whole
generation. So if you just take out the whole Western Front of World War II, it would still be the biggest war in history. So Joe met up with a Russian tank battalion in the 1st Guard Tank Army, and that is where he would meet Alexandria. Joe, making a desperate bid to return home, met the female captain leading the tanks of the Red Army to avenge her destroyed home, where her husband and her entire family were killed during the German invasions. And you know, this is well documented. The Germans were just brutal. They didn't take on the Western Front, it was more of a traditional war. On the Eastern Front,
they
wouldn't take prisoners. I think something like of the German or of the Russian POW, something like 65% of them died, whereas on the Western Front, only like 8% of the Western POWs died. So it was in a war of attrition in the East.
And I think that's where you get the view of, excuse me, people have this view of, well, the Gestapo and Hitler were horrible, but the German army itself wasn't that bad. You know, they kind of played. They did on the Western Front. Mm-hmm. On the Eastern Front, they didn't. That was the regular German army going through there. And it was just it was like a reverse scorched earth. I mean,
that's been proven to be pretty much a myth anyway. The German army was just as ruthless as the Gestapo.
Oh, I know, our perception SS. Comes oh, yeah. from the guys that were coming. You know, they came back. Well, and it they was had it was a subject.
That's
to.
True. It's true. On mm-hmm. There were atrocities on all sides, but it was more atrocities in the East, and then part of it was. After the war, we needed Germany on our side because we went into the Cold War. So we kind of built up this myth that, you know, that the
regular German army Wehrmacht was not involved.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, they couldn't have done it without they couldn't have done it without them.
Yeah. So anyway, he meets up. Joe now meets up with this Red Army, and at first they thought he was German because he had blonde hair. Mm-hmm. And he was light skinned. He almost got shot when he read up.
Fucking Aryans.
Yeah, but what he did was wave a pack of Lucky Strike cigarettes.
Oh, there you go.
And so, you know, kept saying, "American friend, American friend." And the 22-year-old Alexandra, who was the same age as Joe, she was a dark haired beauty, beautiful smile. She was the only female Russian tank commander, and she would soon convince the American soldier that. She would soon let the American soldier convince her to fight by her side on their advance to Berlin. So they're going to Berlin. Joe's just trying to, you know, hook up with an ally, right? So he asked her if he can go along with her. Now, at first, she was hesitant, but she finally agrees. Alexander was born on January 6, 1922, in Belarus. She was the youngest of seven children born to her parents. She has a really kind of sad story. She was raised on a small family farm. Her family was very poor and could not afford to send her to school. So she worked on the farm starting at the age of four. When she was older, she fell in love with a young man named Dmitri. She was about 14 then. Dmitri was educated and taught Alexandra how to read and write and would even teach her English. The couple was married in 1938 when Alexandria was 18 years old. So they were happily married for a couple years. Then in 1941, of course, Germany launched Operation Barbarossa and invaded the Soviet Union. Within weeks, Dmitri was called up for duty. A couple said a tearful goodbye at a train station in Belarus. He promised to return to her and start a family, but in October of 1941, Alexander received a letter that from Dmitri's commanding officer that Dmitri had been killed during a German offensive.
She was not pleased, Timmy.
No, she wasn't. Heartbroken, she left her family to care for her dying aunt about 200 miles east of her hometown in Belarus. 2 weeks after she left to go care for her aunt, she learned that the German army had attacked her village, killing her mother, father, and six siblings.
Now she was mad.
Now she's pissed. Because basically she doesn't... 2 days later, after this event, her only surviving relative, her aunt, died in her arms. So now she has nothing left, right?
She ain't got nothing left to lose, Timmy.
All alone in the world, Alexandra did not know what to do. So she joined the Red Army as a private in the infantry. She had no family, no place, no home, so she decided, screw it, I'll just join the army, get some revenge. The Soviet army was very progressive in providing opportunities for women in military, especially in time of war. And that's what the Germans didn't count on. You know,
right.
They had an idea how the Russian strength was or Soviet strength was, but the Soviets doubled that basically because they had women fighting.
Yeah,
along
they
with
didn't
Sanger
care.
Men.
They
right.
gave women guns.
And,
put them in.
So
she was an attractive woman, too, if you look her up. She was a pretty woman.
So the Soviets were, as I said, they were very progressive. So Alexander went off to training outside of Moscow. She soon proved to be a dedicated and very capable infantry soldier. She demonstrated a great deal of courage and leadership ability. Her abilities did not go unnoticed by her superior officer, one who recommended Alexander for tank school, which now this was a little, you know, this is really progressive because no woman in that time had was driving tanks. But in late 1942, Alexandria graduated first in her class from the Soviet Tank Academy. And the colonel will tell you what happens next.
Well, to me, the following year, in 1943, Alexandra received her Order of the Red Star when her tank crew defeated three German Tiger tanks during the crucial Battle of Krusk, Timmy.
You know, that battle was, there were 6,000 tanks in that battle.
Could you imagine how loud that was?
Oh, my God. 6,000 tanks and 2 million men in the Battle of Krusk.
Could you imagine if we was trying to record an episode with all that nonsense
going on? We kind of like having brandy here in the background.
Well, not that loud, but I mean, it'd be annoying. Yeah. It'd probably be almost as annoying and belligerent as brandy. You'd have to get that many tanks and that many men.
Yeah, exactly.
But the battle was a major turning point for the Soviets in World War II, and one where, combined with the two opposing armies, sent over 15,000 tanks, Timmy. 15,000.
Crazy.
A month later, she became the first and only female Russian tank commander in World War II. Several months later is when she met Jumpin' Joe. And although she seemed to like the young American from the first, she liked talking to him and practicing her English. She was very reluctant to let him fight alongside her battalion because she was a new commander and there weren't really any clear regulations covering this issue.
Right. And, you know, Stalin, you don't really want to...
You don't want to go against Stalin.
you don't want to freelance and make up your rules.
Stalin was not the most progressive of men.
And she was a new tank commander and the only female tank commander. So, you know, she wanted to do
God. She didn't want to draw attention to herself.
She didn't want to break regulations, but okay.
But she reluctantly agreed. And she joined the unit as they made their way to Berlin.
So Joe's with her now.
Yeah. Now, Joe spent the next 3 months fighting right alongside his new battalion on the Eastern Front. Joe followed Alexandra's command like any other soldier, and the two became the best of friends. They would have long, long discussions. I believe they might have been doing it dirty, too.
You know, there's no record of that, so I'm not going to comment on that.
Alexandra was
leave that to your imagination.
Well, she was an attractive guy, and Joe was a bold man. So Alexandra would speak of her deceased husband, Dmitri, and the family that she lost. Joe would tell Alexandra about America and the small Michigan town from which he came. Alexandra taught Joe to speak Russian, and he would teach her American slang. Alexandra confided in Joe, before she joined the Soviet Army, she had visited her husband's grave and promised him that she would make Berlin to avenge his death.
See,
Timmy.
She ain't bullshitting around.
You cannot mess around with those women. You know, because she probably made this decision like on the 12th, 13th of the month. It was like, what am I going to do? And then the PMS hit her and she's like,
this is where you need Brandy tell you to shut up.
I'm going to jump in the tank. I'm going to burn down every goddamn German I see.
Yeah.
So anyway, Joe tells Alexandra that once they arrive in Berlin, they would drink a toast to her husband at the Brandenburg Gate.
Sounds like a plan.
Unfortunately, it was not to be, Timmy.
What happened?
Alexandra, and the rest of the Soviet army continued to fight their way toward Germany on what must have been an incomparably cathartic day for Joe. They liberated Stalag III.
Oh, this is his
last prison camp Joe was held in.
Right.
In early February 44, Joe was badly wounded in an attack from German bombers and was ordered by doctors to be transported to a hospital in Poland. Before leaving for Poland, a wounded and heavily bandaged Joe searched frantically for Alexandra to say goodbye. Ironically, at the same time, Alexandra was searching the hospital for Joe, and the two simply missed each other. It's like those people in the movies running through an airport.
Yeah.
Only with machine gun fire and bombs falling down on you.
A little different, but
kind of the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Joe, however, was able to find Alexandra's tank before he was shipped off to Poland. When Alexandra arrived back at the tank, she found two white roses and a note from Joe that simply read, "Thank you" in Russian. So Joe goes to the hospital. He's mending in Russian-occupied Poland. Soviet Marshal Georgi Zhukov.
Yeah, the famous marshal, the famous military leader.
Yeah.
Soviet Union.
became very interested in the only American in the hospital and came to speak with him to learn his story. He soon gave him official papers to locate and rejoin U.S. troops. From the hospital in Poland, Joe hopped onto a convoy back to Moscow to seek out the American embassy. Unfortunately, his story had already taken a dark turn that would make the rest of his journey home difficult. Joe's dog tags had been found in Normandy after D-Day on what is now presumed, and he was now presumed to be on what was now presumed to be a dead German soldier.
Yeah, so when he was captured, German soldiers takes his
tags,
dog
and
tags.
Then the German soldier gets killed. And they find the German soldier and his dog tags. So they tell his family that he's back in Muskegon, Michigan, that he's dead.
Yes.
And
so now he has to convince them that he's alive.
Now he's got to be like, no, that's me. So the American embassy didn't believe he was who he said he was. After some persistence and insistence, Joe managed to get the embassy to take his fingerprints, and his identity was indeed confirmed. World War II and his long journey were coming to an end for Jumpin' Joe. He returned home to Michigan in April 21st, 1944, celebrated VE Day 2 weeks later in Chicago. Joe married a lovely Joanne Hollowell in 1946, coincidentally in the same church and by the same priest who had held his funeral mass 2 years earlier. So his marriage and his funeral, basically the same thing. I mean, you just go, only thing is, one, you're laying there all relaxed, and the other one, you got a tuxedo and you're sweating. But anyway, Joseph Barrow worked for the Brunswick Corporation for 28 years, retiring as a shipping supervisor. In 1994, to mark the 50th anniversary of D-Day, Joe was honored at the White House by both U.S. President Bill Clinton and Russian President Boris Yeltsin. For the next 10 years, Joe received a lot of publicity in the U.S. and Russia for his amazing journey and the symbol of cooperation he was for the post-Cold War countries. When he returned from the war, Joe had tried to reach Alexandria by mail. However, there is no record she ever received his letters. Sadly, Timmy, Alexandra did not survive the war. On March 3, 1945, 1 month before the war was to end, she died from wounds in the then German village of Zusowitz, just 50 miles east of Berlin. You can look it up.
Just short of her goal.
Zusowitz.
Okay.
Alexandra had been crushed under the tanks of a Soviet tank at night when the tank driver could not see the accompanying soldiers in the darkness.
Oh, that's going to be a terrible way to go, being run over by a tank.
Well, and you know, as the tank's coming over her, she got to be like, are you fucking kidding me?
I go through all this shit.
All this shit, and you're fucking running me over with my own tank.
Yeah, so
on March 13th, Alexandra was posthumously awarded the Order of the Patriotic War First Class by the Soviet Union. In 1973, the story of her life, Flowers on a Tank, became a bestseller in the Soviet Union. In interviews before he died, Joe said he often thought of his old comrade, Alexandra, the woman who saved his life. Joe had said Alexandra was a symbol for Russian courage and fortitude. He undoubtedly a symbol of the same for the Americans. Jumpin' Joe died in his sleep of heart failure on December 12, 2004, during a visit to Taco, Georgia, where he had originally trained with paratroopers in 1942. He was 81 years old. He was buried with full military honors at Arlington Cemetery. Fittingly, his eldest son, Joe Jr., served in the 101st Airborne in the Vietnam War, and his youngest son, John, would go on to serve as the United States Ambassador to Russia from 2008 to 2012, Timmy.
All right.
So it's kind of an encouraging but heartbreaking story, Timmy.
Yes. All right, Colonel, what's your final thoughts on comrades, Jumpin' Joe and Alexandra?
Well, you know, I think that the Russians could have done a little bit of better job of tailoring her, because this woman had a nice set of knockers on her, Timmy. And the uniform just doesn't show it off.
Well, they need to work on that.
They should have. Yeah. They should have.
Yeah.
But Joe's a pretty tough bastard.
Yeah, he was. And
wouldn't want to mess with him.
It's interesting that his son became ambassador to Russia.
Yeah.
Just simply because he looks like he has a pretty much blue collar background, and then in the course of one generation to you know, right. be an ambassador. Yeah, I mean,
that's impressive.
Yeah, it is. All right, Colonel, you got some shout-outs for us for our Patreon supporters?
I do, our Patreon supporters. Let's start with Stephen Potts.
Well, I just would like to say before we do that, if you would like to support us on Patreon, just go to patreon.com/historydweebs where you can give a little, you can give a lot,
or just a wee little bit to me.
Yeah, we really, really do appreciate all of your generous donations, and the Colonel's going to give some shout-outs to Stephen.
Stephen Potts.
Yes, and all of our wonderful Patreon supporters.
James Seabright, Tommy Lane, Jason Dykes.
Yeah, Jason has a episode coming up, one that he wrote.
So does he?
Yeah,
we're doing one of his scripts.
Yeah,
hopefully. Scripts are always good.
Yeah, they're always good.
Terry Stafford, my ill-tempered co-host on Ransom Reason, Shelly Garrett.
Hi, Shelly.
She's quite jealous of my dog. She's got dogs,
too. She's Shelly and Karen.
She's Shelly and Karen.
Yes.
She is.
So, multiple Karen personalities.
Michelle, but, yeah, we got into a little bit of a falling out over dogs, Timmy.
Why is that? What happened?
Well, she's got this dog. It's English. It's some kind of weird shepherd dog, mm-hmm. you know. But it looks like a golden retriever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got a really big butt. And
okay. You pointed that out?
I did.
You know, you should never point out women big butts.
Yeah, but Rudy likes a big butt. Okay. I just pointed out.
Can
maybe
I lie?
We could hook him up. He likes big butts. He cannot lie. Maybe I was thinking, you know, maybe there could be a
right.
Maybe that could be a history dweeb.
But she wasn't open to that.
She was not open to Rudy being around her dog in any fashion.
Okay.
And she was not pleased that I said her dog had a big butt. But her dog does have a big butt. So the dog was all like, does this fur make my ass look big? And I was like, no, your ass makes your ass. But anyway, I'll move on.
Okay.
Bridget Clavey.
The lovely Bridget Clavey.
Brandy McBride.
Brandy.
Jennifer Swoda. Savoda, Jennifer. I'm sorry.
Hey, Jennifer.
Maggie, our poet in residence. Mike Sadler, Jamie Dent, Maja, Tyrone, Amber Scoville, Marsha Boris, Stacey Allison, Jody and Sean Wells, Amber Anderson, of course, our good friends from They Walk Among Us, Ben and Rosanna.
Yes, mm-hmm. Ben and Rosanna.
The and best last, podcast. I'll tell you what, that last episode they did on that.
Alan Turing, and it was great.
It was a two-parter.
It was great, and I know it's not true crime, and you know they got some bad feedback, unfortunately.
That was like the greatest story.
Oh, I know. It's awesome. Awesome work. And if you haven't checked out They Walk Among Us, check them out. Check out the latest. Well, actually, it was a two-parter. So the last two
episodes.
It was
a two-parter. Season 2, episode 19, episode 20.
Yeah, it's awesome. So check it out.
It is really
I mean, we kind of go through the same thing when we don't do true crime. We get fewer downloads. Like this one will get fewer downloads if we did a serial killer. But I just like to
You bunch of sick bastards.
I just like to mix it up myself. It makes it more interesting for me, but they did it. It was such a great podcast, great episode.
Well, you know, honestly, they do true crime.
I mean,
all of
their episodes are good, but I really like the Alan Turing episodes.
But even, you know, when I listened to it and I got to part two, and when it was over, I was like, hey, nobody killed him. What? There was no murder in here.
Okay.
But it was a great movie. Great episode.
Yeah, it's, check it out.
Lorna Violet, Michael Deo, Kelly Charette, Karen Widner, Callie.
Callie
Lovely
Jones.
Callie.
She is so funny.
She is the funniest person I've ever met.
She is a hoot.
But she got talent toes.
Yes.
Big old talents for feet. Lauren Meredith, Jessica Greeno, of course, our friend of Pleasing Tears.
Yes, Mike Brown.
Mike. Ben D. Jennifer Riker-Smith. I love Jennifer. Sarah Bloom, who is, of course, our sergeant at arms.
And ambassador.
And ambassador. The lovely and beautiful Amber Krupp. Joe from Now America History Podcast. Catherine, the Cock Rodrigson. Fiona Crisp. Laura O'Reilly. Christine Bourgeois. Aaron. Kimberly Cameron, Elise, of course, Diane Student from History Goes Bump and that Portrayed, Elise, Jahara, Alicia Smith, and Chip, Marika Smith, Jeff and Dawn, Jeff, the sock connoisseur that he is. He's a dapper man.
He has a lot of socks.
He does. Backroads to History. He's got cool shoes, too. He's got the Backroads to History and Poems by Jeff. I have to admit, I haven't listened to Poems by Jeff, but Backroads is really a
I think
good
I'm
going to
write a poem and send to him and see if he'll read it.
I wrote him, too, about a girl from Nantucket.
He's never
but he
read
hasn't
him.
Done either of them.
Huh. can't believe
Karen
that.
Barnes, Rachel Flynn, Shirley Strapp, Todd Long, Lydia Fisher, Phyllis Munson, Melissa Montoya, Cindy Liu, Kristen Malachinsky, Amanda Christine. Let's see where we're at here. Heather Poole, Adam McWaters, The Vanish Podcast.
Marissa Jones.
Marissa. Lovely Christy Lee, who has much nicer teeth than I do today.
She has a Canadian True Crime Podcast.
Yeah, she's, and don't be climbing those mountains and trying to sneak over here, Christy Lee. So insight,
and she's an Aussie, too.
She is an Aussie. So that's, you know, she could climb the mountains.
Oh, yeah. She's probably hiked the Outback before.
Oh, yeah. Insight. Charlie and Allie, of course, our good friends who are up for an award. Look for that link on their page, the Insight page, for the Best
Job,
Australian Podcast Award.
Yeah,
so
good job.
I voted for him 3 times. Joe Clifford, Mistress Veda, Ron Monasterio.
Tracy only way we're going to win an award is get the Russians involved.
It is. There's going to have to be some kind of undue influence.
Although Karen Barnes is kind of our Russian. I mean, she kind of fixes our elections for us usually.
She does.
Yeah.
She does. She helps us out. We got John V. Nene, Bridget Bernard, Stacy, Christine Howard, Cheryl Weldon, Nicholas, Ryan, Margaret McDonald, Aaron Turner, Michelle Johns, Clark and Diane Trowbridge, Beth Wallen, Andrew Scammell, Michaela Wallstrom, Aaron Fowler, Leanne Flanagan, Julia Rodriguez, Hiro, Ursula, the Comeback Podcast, of course, Kim Stroop, Joe Clifford, Carol Elise, Rudy the Wonder Dog.
Yes, our official mascot.
Lady Beverly, and the lady we do this show for, the queen of all of our hearts, Dottie Scott.
Yes. Thank all of you for supporting us on Patreon. And again, if you'd like to support us on Patreon, just go to patreon.com/historydweebs. And if you would like to join our Facebook group, just search for History Dweebs, the podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. And we'll see you next time on History Dweebs. Bye, everyone.
Good day.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.